Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with the Rose Colombo, right here for you on the West Coast. And today is the 4th of July, Independence Day for America and Americans. So thank God for the 4th of July, because today is a time when family and friends come first and come together and celebrate the birthday of the United States of America. And it's a very exciting day here in America. I want to thank all the people from around the world, especially in Europe and Asia, who listen to Colombo Chronicles Live. I really love having you as part of our audience. Sweden, Ireland, Norway, I mean, it goes on and on. Thank you so much, and God bless you, and celebrate with us today on the 4th of July, because, you know, the United States of America is the beacon of light for freedom, liberty, and rights. And it's because of our framers, who were God-fearing, God-loving men, at least the majority were, they decided to create and write and approve, along with we the people, of the Constitution of the United States of America. So we're going to ring the Liberty Bell, and we're going to think of rights, because America has many, many rights that other countries do not. But perhaps one day they will. The people around the world, perhaps one day, will be at peace and have freedom, liberty, and rights, and be able to have individual rights and the right to life, the right to freedom of religion, the right to bear arms, and the right to own their own property. We're so fortunate today to be able to own our own property, because in socialist countries, the government owns the property and they can confiscate that property at any time. So thank God for our framers, because inside of the Constitution, they included that only a natural-born citizen born on U.S. soil or protected U.S. soil to two legal parents would be eligible, and he would have the privilege as his birthright to be eligible as a U.S. president. And that was done in order to assure the American people that the president of the United States was not only innate to our soil, but that he would be, or she would be, the one person who would love their country and their American people and their Constitution, Bill of Rights, Declaration of Independence, and the sovereignty of this great nation, one nation under God, more than any other person who was born in a foreign nation. Because when you're born in a foreign nation, you're innate to that soil, and being innate to that soil, you may legally come into the United States and legally become a proud American. If you go through the port of entry and follow the rule of law or immigration laws and be a loyal American, but you will also be torn between your home country and the United States of America. And a master cannot have two masters. They can only have one master. And that master must be United States of America, the soil, innate to that soil, a man or woman innate to the soil. So happy 4th of July. Happy Independence Day. God bless you and God bless America. And on that note, well, I hope you're having a barbecue or you're at the beach or you're in your backyard or just relaxing at home with family and friends and just awaiting the time that you can see all of the fireworks go off. Maybe you're near Disneyland or a Knott's Berry Farm or some other entertainment center, a park, the piers at the beach have fireworks shows. Those are very safe areas to go to for fireworks. So if you're doing your own fireworks and it's allowed in your city, please be very, very careful, because I have seen people holding a firework that blew up in their hand. And so please, please make sure that your children are safe and that you're safe and handling those fireworks properly, so you can enjoy the evening. But best of all, take your kids to a park, take your kids to the beach, you know, and you can see all the fireworks going up or some other sports arena or arena that is holding fireworks shows like the Rose Bowl or the Hollywood Bowl and so forth. Whatever you do, have fun and enjoy and celebrate Independence Day for America. And on that note, we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts, as we do every Wednesday, with a prominent guest. And today we have a very dynamic guest, and his name is Shelley Cohen, and he wrote an autobiography, and it is entitled From Brooklyn to Burbank. And I was in New York with my daughters, and we didn't make it to Brooklyn. Always wanted to make it to Brooklyn, but we just didn't. But we loved New York. We had a great time. But so this is going to be interesting for you and for me, because From Brooklyn to Burbank is the story of a man who was born during the Great Depression in the 1930s. So he's seen a lot, and he's experienced a lot. His thirst for knowledge and his tenacity took him from his birthplace to the pinnacles of success in television production in Hollywood. Although his main focus was music, he found that he could do many other creative works as well. He's written several books and many short stories. He's also become a much sought-after lecturer. His latest book, From Brooklyn to Burbank, is an autobiography, as I stated. It allows the reader to share in many of this author's personal experiences, Shelley Cohen. So on that note, let's take a break, and then we'll enter back into the world of authors and experts, and we'll speak to our very, very special guest. So don't touch that dial. We will be back in just a moment.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car. Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion? Not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Columbo Chronicles Live with Rose Columbo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Columbo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics. From politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up. Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc. Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Colombo's home on the Colombo Chronicles Live to your home, Colombo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening. Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up. Listen up every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles Live. Just for you. All shows are archived for your information, and you can go to blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles, bookmark, share, follow, and you can scroll on down and you can listen to any of your favorite prominent guests and who are authors or experts in their field and choose a topic. Excellent information. Self-help tips, motivation, autobiographies, politics, love, romance, health, you name it. The experts are on Colombo Chronicles Live. Now we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts, and we're going to speak to a very special man and an author who wrote an autobiography. His name, again, is Shelley Cohen. That's C-O-H-E-N. And his book is From Brooklyn to Burbank. And everybody loves New York, and everybody loves Hollywood. So this is perfect, right, for the 4th of July. And let's say hello to our very special guest, Shelley Cohen. Hi, Shelley. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you, Rose. And hello to you and to all your listeners. I'm looking forward to speaking with you today.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it, and so are the listeners, because you have an interesting background in how you came to know Johnny Carson, who everybody knows and loves, and everybody watched and still watches the reruns of the Johnny Carson show because it's so funny and good, clean fun for sure. So my first question to you, since you wrote your autobiography, which we're so happy that you're sharing it with us today, is to ask you, what kind of musical education did you have?
Well, let's see. I didn't really start my musical education until I was about 12, when I went to high school and they offered a free course in learning how to play the clarinet. And so I said, I've got nothing to lose, I'll try it. But prior to that, my mother took me at age 10 to the local violin teacher and said, please teach him how to play violin. Well, that took about 2 weeks, and I said, Mom, I'm sorry, can't do that. I'm busy playing baseball and stickball in the streets. But once I got into high school, I sensed that there was something about this music that I really liked. And I went on with that. I'll take you through a whole bunch of years. I went back to the music teacher, the violin teacher, and studied the violin. Now I was playing the clarinet and the violin. Then I joined the musicians' union and started playing, as they say in the trade, gigs, like engagement parties and weddings and bar mitzvahs and things like that, until I got into college. And then I started playing with the Brooklyn College Symphony and Juilliard Orchestra. And then I enlisted in the Army. I'm giving you a whole litany of things. Enlisted in the Army. and came out and continued my education, which, by the way, never really ends in music, and I'm sure in other places. You just never stop learning. If you do, I think you're going to die. But anyhow, I'm still learning. I still have a stack of books on my desk, and every once in a while I pore over them, and like that.
I agree with you 100%. And once you stop learning, then you might as well just roll over and die, because
right.
There's so much to learn, and we can never learn everything in a lifetime. So it's exciting to know that we can continue on learning and keeping our mind going. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because you were you experienced the depression. What was it like since you were a child and you wanted to play baseball and all these games, and then you ended up in your high school years, of course?
Well, I think
the musician
it's not,
you wanted to be.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Rose.
That's okay.
I'm
interruptible.
You know, I was really not aware that we were in depression, because as a child, you go to school, you play in the streets, you do what your family wants you to do. There was always food on the table. We always had a place to sleep. We had a cold water flat, if nobody knows what that is, that we didn't have any heat in the wintertime, and the hot water was not necessarily always there when you wanted it. And I may have experienced a little bit of, you know, this depression blues, but my parents were really the ones who were responsible for it, so I wasn't. You know, I just enjoyed my little life in the streets, mainly with my friends.
That's good to know, because a lot of people, you know, wonder about what it was like back then and for the kids. And
mm-hmm.
I'm sure the parents had a little tougher time, but I'm glad to hear that that a lot of kids just are kids and they do what they do and not really realize that it could be different.
Yeah, needless to say, there were many people, especially the Okies, who really experienced the depression full blast, and their lives were uprooted. But for me, it was, as I said, fairly good.
Oh, good. So how did you get started in television then?
Well, that is an interesting point. I came out of the Army and was going to night school, and I didn't have a job, so I went to NBC and got a job in the mailroom, delivering mail. Now, I chose the mailroom because I thought that would be the best place for me to get to meet people in the industry. Now, I'm going to night school in the meantime, and I delivered the mail to several musical directors, and one of them was a guy by the name of Skitch Henderson, and he was conducting the Steve Allen late night show at the time, and I walked into his office. I said, "Mr. Henderson, where shall I put your mail?" He said, "Well, put it on the desk over there." And I said, "Mr. Henderson, if I could just take a moment of your time, I'm going to night school studying music. Do you think I could talk to you sometime about careers in music?" He said, "Come back at lunchtime, we'll have a nice chat." Well, of course, I couldn't eat my lunch. I was so excited that I went back there, and he kept me there for about an hour, telling me all the possibilities and encouraged me. And he gave me some incidental jobs to do in between. And I got a job in the music department, the music library. Now, that really started to open the doors, because all the music that was being done in New York was in television primarily, was going through that office. And I was there. Wow. And, of course, Skitch Henderson became a very good friend. And one day, I get a call at home. He says, "Shelley, we're getting a new show. I'm getting a new show. I want you to be my assistant conductor." Now, I'm still in night school, and here I became assistant conductor of The Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson. Well, I thought I died and went to heaven. It was just amazing. Are you still with me, Rose?
I'm with you. I think that's really exciting. And so what was it like? How did you meet Johnny Carson?
Well, of course, we were on the show. I remember when he started the show, it was in October. And prior to that, Ed McMahon and Skitch Henderson did the first part of the show. I didn't get to meet him for a while, but this is what happened. And it's kind of a funny story, but anyhow, I'll let you hear it. So Skitch calls me one day. He says, "I'm not feeling well, Shelley. You got to come in and conduct." Now, I had never conducted a show before. I did some minor conducting, but nothing. There's 10 million people going to watch me that night. So the first thing I do is call my mother, who lives in Brooklyn. I say, "Mom, get in a cab. Go to 30 Rockefeller Plaza. I'll meet you downstairs. I'm going to take you in to see the Tonight Show. I'm conducting the orchestra. First time ever." Well, there she shows up on 4 o'clock. I get her a seat about 5 rows back in front of Johnny. They introduce me. I started conducting the show, and I did a commendable job. And when it was over, I couldn't wait to go and speak to my mother. I said, so after the show, I walked over. "Mom, what did you think?" And she looked at me and said, "When are you going to get a regular job?" Well, needless to say, slightly devastating. But, you know, I've come to understand that her background was, you know, you bring home a paycheck on Friday, you work 9 to 5. Had no idea what it is to be in the music business. But there I was. Needless to say, I never invited her back. My ego was a little bit too fragile for that. But after that, you know, I became the assistant conductor and been with all, there were 3 conductors on the Tonight Show over the years. I always remained there, even though some of them left.
Oh. So what was Ed McMahon like?
Oh, Ed McMahon, he was a doll. I mean, he was a good friend of mine. As a matter of fact, I wrote and produced his nightclub act, and he did appear on one of my recordings doing some readings and a television special, which I produced for NBC. He was just a dreamy guy, came to the house on my birthday, you know, and he just an admirable fellow. Unfortunately, his life took a bad turn near the end, and he lost pretty much all his money. And I was talking to him one day, and he kind of let me know exactly how it happened. His wife got into the fashion clothes business, and it just drained all his money. And so I remember him coming on television, you know, just telling everybody his woes. It was not pleasant, not at all.
Oh, that's sad. One time I was, it was a long time ago, I was with my mom. I was a young girl, and we were at a restaurant in a hotel in San Diego, and we were walking to the restroom, and this gentleman turned around and says, "Well, hello, pretty ladies." And I looked up, it was Ed McMahon.
I guess he was flirting. He may have been in between marriages at the time.
But, you know, it's one of those moments you never forget.
How did you find him, Rose? Did you find him objectionable or what?
Oh, I thought he was just charming.
Oh, okay. That's great.
I was excited.
He was charming. He was a very charming man.
Yeah, I mean, he said it in a very charming way, you know. It's not like today when everything's sexual harassment.
Oh, right,
it was
exactly.
Actually a nice compliment back then.
Yeah. Let me share another story about Ed. Or what? Want to go
absolutely.
On to something else?
Absolutely.
Well,
no,
this one is not. This is not a happy story, but this is the way it came down. I got a call one time from a producer who was putting on an outdoor concert in Washington D.C. for the dedication of the Korean War Veterans Memorial. And we were doing this big outdoor concert. I mean, symphony orchestra. 200 people came from Korea in all their costumes, and we had singers and all kinds of things. And they asked me if I could get Ed McMahon to do the narration on an album that I had made with him on the Battle Hymn of the Republic. and another piece as well. And I said, let me give him a call. Well, I did, and Ed said, sure, let's do it. So I get on the plane first, and he was to follow it like 2 days later. I'm rehearsing the symphony orchestra and an army chorus, and he comes in. This is what I found out exactly what happened later. He got to the airport. There was a call waiting from his family that his son was dying. And so, needless to say, Ed got on the plane and went home. And I was left. I was in Washington, and, of course, we made do. But I always felt how sad, you know, to go on a business trip and find out that someone close to you is not going to be with you any longer. It was a tough one. I told you this was going to be a little sad, but I experienced it with him.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I mean, you know, people are human, and other celebrities, you know, and everything looks fantastic. They're still human beings, and they still have feelings and loved ones that they care about. And I'm thank you for sharing that.
Oh, you're welcome. Most of my stories about Ed and the other people are happy ones. I just thought I'd throw that in for you.
Yeah, I don't think. I've never heard that story, so I don't think our audience has either. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Okay,
so you're a young man, and but did you ever fall in love and get married?
Did I ever? my wife and I met when we were in high school. She was 14 and I was 16. We dated for a while and then we parted. And then I joined the Army. And while I was about to go be transferred over to Germany, to where I was stationed, I got a call from my friends. They said, what are you doing on Saturday? I said, guys, I'm coming in. What's going on? They said, well, we're going to this really nice nightclub. Get yourself a gal, and we'll go. We'll have a grand time. They have a band. You know, the food's great. I said, where am I going to get a girl? It's Wednesday. How am I going to get a girl for Saturday? I mean, that's hard. I said, well, let me think about it. So now I go back to my black book, the infamous black book, thumb through the pages, and come up with his name, Leona Levy. Now, of course, I remembered Leona. We dated for a while. She was 14 when I met her. And now here we are. Here she was 18. And I remembered I said I would write a letter to her, or write some letters to her while I was in the Army, and I never wrote. So now I get on the phone. I said, I need a date. I'm going to call her, which I did. This is paraphrasing the phone call. Hi, Leona, how are you? And she says, oh, who is this, Shelley? I said, yeah, Shelley Cohen. You remember me? Of course I remember you. But, Shelley, you said you were going to write to me when you were in the Army. You never wrote. I said to her, you know, is your address 165 Penn Street? She said, no, it's 65 Penn Street. And I said to her, as fast as I could, oh, no wonder I kept getting the letters back. A little white lie. And then I quickly came up with, listen, we're going out Saturday night. I don't care what you're doing. I'm taking you out to dinner. And she said, okay, I'm busy, but I'll do it. Well, that was the start of it. And before I left, we made promises to one another that when I came back, we would marry. And we did. Ta-da!
See, that was one promise you did keep.
Absolutely. But she said to me, I forgot this. When I was going, before I went to pick her up for the date, she said, remember, my address is 65 Ben Street, not 165. I said, okay, got it.
Did you ever tell her the truth?
Oh, yes, of course. I owned up to that one a long time ago.
That was quick thinking. And it worked.
Yeah, when you need a date, you need a date. That's the way I looked at it.
Seriously. So did you work a lot with Johnny Carson? And do you have anything you want to share about maybe his last show or any of his last shows?
Well, I'll talk about two things. Okay, well, let me talk about the last. I'll talk about the last show after I tell you this one story. He's used, Johnny is characterized, by many people as being a loner. And I think they're looking at him as a loner in a social setting. Of course, you know, when he walks through that curtain, he is unbelievably good. But in a social situation, he kind of goes off in a corner, and he doesn't get too friendly with people. But I knew him, and so I just got this show to do for NBC as a producer, producing a Christmas special called Christmas with Friends. And I needed an opening act. I had Ed McMahon signed. I had Doc signed to do his part. Tommy Newsom was going to be on it. Of course, I was. I brought my choir, my 100-voice choir on there. But I didn't have an opening act. So here I am, thinking about how I'm going to do this. And I'm walking in the parking lot. Well, who pulls up? Was Johnny. So I quickly ran over to him. I knew no fear in those days. Still, I don't have too much fear in me. I said, Johnny, I explained the situation. I have the show. How would you like to do the opening? He said, well, send me the script and I'll see. Well, there was no script. So I quickly got on the phone with my director. We put our heads together, came up with something. I grabbed a typewriter, typed it up, took it up to Johnny's office, gave it to his secretary, and I figured that's the end of it. Well, that night, the secretary came down when the show was over and said, Johnny would like to see you. So, needless to say, I went up there, and there he was in his office. Come on in, Shelley. Have a seat. And there we had my script in front of him. He said, you know, this is okay, but what would you think if I instead of, I'm dressed as Santa Claus, you know, that's what the whole premise was. He was going to deliver his gifts as Santa Claus. And he said, what if I had a whole cue card in front of me that said, ho, 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 100 times on it? I said, gee, that would be nice. Does that mean that you want to do the show, Johnny? He said, yeah. I said, you know, I have another problem. I don't have a big budget, and I know your fees are usually pretty hefty. He said, well, I'll never forget this as long as I live. And what is union scale? And I had an idea. It was about $1,000. I said, $1,000. He says, I'll take it. Now, Doc is getting $15,000. And here's Johnny taking $1,000 to do the opening of the show. Well, the next day I called the programming department. I thought they would faint. And I got Johnny Carson to do the opening. Wow. Could you imagine? Of course, he did it. And the show ran for 8 years. As a matter of fact, we were the introductory show on NBC for the Pope. We did 11:30 to 12, and then the Pope came on. So I have that great distinction of being the opening act for the Pope.
That is a great story. Thank you.
Well, and now you want me to, now the second one is going to be about Bette Midler, right?
Oh, I know.
This is about the next to the last show on that we did. This is part two. So it's coming down the wire. We have two shows to do. The one before the final show was, he invited a couple of guests, and one of them was Bette Midler, who had prepared a piece of material, special lyrics on a song called One for My Baby and One for the Road. And I remember this. I was not backstage, but I was on the sidelines watching this thing unfold. They had a camera stage left, and the shot that we were doing had Bette Midler in the foreground, and right behind her, you can see Johnny sitting in his chair watching her perform this number. And all it said was, the number basically said how much she loved him, how much the world loved his contribution to show business, and how greatly he would be missed. And I watched Johnny. It was the closest I ever saw him in cry. And he may have cried, you know, when he was off camera, but it was such an emotional high. I mean, it was just amazing. And, of course, then she finished the song. She put a Hawaiian lei on his head and kissed him goodbye. She left, and he sat down at the desk again. How do you like that?
Oh,
Rose,
that's wonderful.
Are you there?
I am here listening. I'm just fascinated with it. That is a very touching story, and it gives the human side of Johnny Carson and Bette Midler too. I love Bette Midler. Great actor.
Oh, she's got a heart of gold. She's one of those gals. You know, she was very sincere what she said. I mean, just amazing. And he appreciated that. She'd been on the
I
show
didn't.
Many times.
Yeah, I have her DVDs. I like her.
Oh, yeah. No, nothing wrong with that. She's an excellent gal. Anyhow, so those are two Johnny Carson stories that I always like to tell because they are.
Well, I'm glad you told them to us because we haven't heard them before, and even if we did, we would love them to hear them again and repeat them as well and read them in your book as well, any stories you have in your book from Brooklyn to Burbank with Shelley Cohen, an autobiography that people will not want to put down because it's a fast read and it's only, let's see.
100 pages.
It was exactly 87 pages.
Oh, I see. I put a lot of pictures in there. I figure pictures say 1,000 words, right? Isn't that the saying? Pictures are worth 1,000 words. And I put some pictures that were very close to my heart. There's one picture in there of my wife before we were married. It was in my locker in Germany while I was stationed there. And I would look at that every day and say, 42 days left, 30 days left, and I'll see you. May I tell a quick story about her? Another one?
Sure. And then we'll take a break, and then I want to ask you about Doc Severinsen.
If you want, why don't you take your break, and then come back, I'll tell it. Is that right?
Okay, perfect. That sounds fantastic. We'll be right back in a moment. Don't touch that dial, because Shelley has another great story for us, and I know everybody's going to wait with bated breath, so hold on.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right, everyone. Listen up. You're listening to Columbo Chronicles Live with the Rose Columbo, right here for you every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. on the West Coast, and that would be 3 to 4 p.m. on the East Coast. Check in your state or your county for the time. Bookmark, share, and follow Columbo Chronicles Live. All shows are taped live and archived for your listening convenience as well. And we've been talking to a fantastic guest, Shelley Cohen, and he wrote his autobiography, From Brooklyn to Burbank. He's going to tell you where you can get his book in just a little bit, but right now he's going to tell us a story about him and his bride. So,
okay. So now
Shelley,
I ship out. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Shelley.
So I ship out to Germany. I'm stationed in Hanau, Germany for a year or so. I became a surveyor, not music, a surveyor in the artillery. And needless to say, I have the calendar on inside my locker and crossing off the days. Now it's coming close to me going home. So I write my last letter saying, I'll be home around such and such a date in August, I think it was, and, you know, I'll be home soon. So I pack up, go to Bremerhaven, where we get on a troop ship, and it's like 10 or 12 days across the Atlantic. We pull into New York Harbor at about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm on the deck, top deck. I'm so excited I can hardly stand it. I look up the New York Bay, and there is all the lights of Manhattan. I mean, this is like, I can't even tell you the feeling that I had. I'm home after a year or so of being away. And on the right side is the Statue of Liberty, where my father came when he came from Russia. He saw that, and I saw it. And all these thoughts are flying through my mind. Can't wait for us to get off the boat and go home. So then somebody comes with a list, says, okay, line up according to your name. Gangplank is over there on deck 3. Go down to Gangplank, and there'll be a bus waiting for you to take you to camp and do what you have to do. So I'm standing there. I look over the railing. Guess who's waiting for me there? Leona, my wife, my almost wife, with a great big sign, welcome home, Shelley. Well, needless to say, the tears were rolling down my face. And when I came down the gangplank, she was there. She took me around. I grabbed her, threw her on the ground, and made love to her right there. No, not really.
Wow.
But it sure felt good.
Well, in your mind, maybe you did that.
Oh, yeah, well. Mind is a wonderful place, but you shouldn't let anybody get in there too much.
Use your imagination, right?
Yep.
That's a great story, and one that you can pass on to your grandkids for sure. That's a great story.
Yeah,
Rose. Oh, so then what was it like working with Doc Severinsen? He was very popular as well.
Doc was on the NBC music staff when I first went to work at NBC. He was a trumpet player in the band, and he was played with Skitch and the Tonight Show band. And then when Skitch left, we had Milton DeLugge came in as a musical director, and Doc left for a year and did his own thing somewhere. Then he came back as the conductor. And he knew me, I fortunately was kept in my position as the assistant conductor and worked alongside of him. But we went back a couple of years before that. We really knew one another. Doc was an interesting person. He was perhaps the greatest trumpet player I've ever heard. I mean, he was just phenomenal. A little introspective, not terribly outgoing, except when he was dealing with Johnny. Well, I mean, Doc had a sense of humor that just wouldn't quit, and Johnny just absolutely ate it up. So they were just, you could see that there was a lot of good stuff going on between them. But Doc had, he had some other traits which may not were his own, and that was he didn't have a lot of friends in the band, but maybe that was done on purpose. You know, these people were working for him. So he kept his distance. Of course, I had a very nice relationship with him. It was never a problem. I handled a lot of his other activities as well. But if he was practicing his trumpet or playing with his mouthpiece and you were trying to have a conversation with him, forget it. He just was into the mouthpiece. And you could be rambling on about something, and he just wasn't tuned in. One day he was doing that, and I got disgusted. I said, "I'll see you, Doc." He said, "Oh, no, I'm going to Shelby. Come on back. Let's finish up." So, you know, I kind of put him on the spot then. But he certainly held his own in the music department over there to Tonight Show. He was great. Nobody better.
Was he married and with children?
He had a couple of marriages, maybe three. He had some children, yes. Don't ask me their names now. I met them all, but I don't remember them. Yeah, it was one of those rocky things, show business things. I don't know. I can never understand exactly why the people in those positions kind of went from one marriage to another. It's just, I think one time we on a whim we put together all the wives of the director, Ed McMahon, Doc, and Johnny, and we came up with about 16 wives. And I said to, we were just kidding around. I said, boy, I would love to have some of those alimony checks. Yow!
That's the same thing I was thinking. Holy fuck, that's a lot of support going out there.
Rose, let me ask you a question. Do you think it goes with the territory?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Too much notoriety, except when you got home, you had to take out.
I think you have to be really, really, I just think you have to be really, really focused on your wife with all the temptation.
Yep. Well, here's what happens in my mind. You go to the show, you get all this adulation, you come home at night and she says, take out the garbage.
Right.
Well, that's a leveler right there.
Seriously, I mean, think about it. You know, you're up on stage and you're getting all these applause and everybody loves you and smiling at
right.
you. And then you go home to reality and as human beings, most of us
I guess that's it. But it's unfortunate. They keep searching for something, but I think they forget that they've got to contribute to it. Right.
Bottom line is that even though they marry somebody else, the same thing happens over again because people get comfortable with each other, and then you're seeing all of your not just the things you like about the person, but the flaws, and then they get back on the stage, and all these people are applauding you again, and you're like, oh, God, I gotta go home. You're gonna tell me to take out the garbage.
Unfortunately, this is the reality of the world, and it's interesting to be on the sidelines and see that. My marriage is gone. We're getting married. Leona and I married 62 years.
Oh,
give me a break. 62 wonderful years.
That's fantastic. A family unit is the foundation of a civilized nation, and the breakdown of morality and all of that go along with it. So I congratulate you. I think that's fantastic and wonderful.
Thank you. I see you have some insights into the world situation that I'd like to explore with you sometime. But anyhow, it's true what you say.
So true. And so, Shelley, we need to focus on you and from Brooklyn to Burbank. And so did you ever do any other work for NBC?
Oh, yes. I've been involved with several shows. One was NBC Follies. I did a couple of specials, two Christmas specials for NBC, one of which I mentioned to you as a producer. And, I've always been asked to do other things, and I never said no. Also, I'm a lecturer now, and I produce all the audio entities for a company in Chicago that does religious music. And so I've had a varied career. It mainly centered around music. I lectured at the LA Philharmonic on classical music. And I'll tell you, I never say no. There's an old show business axiom that goes something like this. If you're going for a job and it says, can you ride a horse? You say you can ride a horse, and then you go out and learn to ride a horse. Right? And so it's the same thing. Same thing applies. You know, if somebody says, can you do this, Shelley? Oh, yeah, I can do that. And then quickly get on the phone and find out the basics.
Yes, I've done that a few times myself.
Oh, yeah. Well, so you know of which I speak here.
Oh, yes. And all of a sudden you go into survival mode and I've got to get this down pat now.
Survival, I think, is the word.
How
do you put food on the table? Any way you possibly can.
Oh, I've been there.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. So then what other activities are you interested in besides music?
Well, Well, I'm writing short stories now. I just can't seem to get into a really big book. So, I mean, I'm writing short stories. I took some writing courses to kind of hone my skills. That helped a lot. This next 2 weeks from now, I'm doing another recording, a big band recording. I'll send you a copy as soon as it's hot off the press. You'll love it.
Wow, thank you.
I always got to do something musical.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't have my finger in a music thing, I think I'll die. So I do I do albums, CDs.
Passion. That's your passion.
Absolutely. It gets into your pancreas, as they say, and you can't get it out.
When people follow their passion, they're happier than if they think they're going to go out and try something different that they don't have that passion for, but they think they can do it. I think passion always comes back to them.
Yeah. I did some mentoring and some teaching special students, and I think one of the things I impart to them, it takes a while for them to get it. I said, listen, you need to get a very, very good education, as much as you possibly can. Know your subject. If you're orchestrating for a symphony orchestra, you've got to know it. Don't just think you get by. So education is kind of at the bottom. It's a major thing. And the other thing, I think, is don't be afraid to go after something. Be a little tenacious. Go after it. And it may be a little beyond you, but, you know, you never know where it's going to go. If I hadn't gone to Skitch Edison and said, you know, what can you tell me about the music business, I may still be in the mailroom for all I know. But I've learned that over the years. You just got to go for it. And don't be a pussycat about it. You know, I mean, you don't want to hurt anybody either, but you just to make sure that you impart to them that you're good. And you
will
be
like
good
that
for them.
I like it because I truly believe that, you know, if it's something that you want to try and you have a desire to try it and, you know, don't let fear get in your way, which most of us do, because, which, you know, you have to learn over the years to get rid of the fear so that you can go for it. And don't, even if somebody says no, don't listen to the negative. Go with the positive in your own head and give it a try. There's no failures. You just pick yourself up and try again, right?
Yeah, it's too many people just, they take defeat and then it kind of takes them down to zero. You can't stay down. You can't. Got to get up off the mat, and you got to get up there and fight, because there's plenty of other people who will get. You'll get in front of you if you let them. But I keep coming back to this: that you can't hurt anybody along the way. That's not the way I see it. You know, don't do that. But in your own way, you have to develop that. You be persuasive. Get the job. Learn the job, do the best you can, and go at top speed. They used to catch me in the hallway running all the time. Well, that's what I did. I ran, and I got the job done because the red light goes on at 5:30. Well, you better have the music all lined up. And so I learned that over the years, and I tell my students that the same thing. Go for it.
Go for it, you know, if you don't make it the first time, then take it as a learning lesson. Figure out what you did that you could change to make it and improve it and do better the next time, you know.
You're saying the right words there, Rose.
Thank you.
That's all part of it.
Yes, that's what I try to tell my children, as they're adults, but I try to tell them, you know, you don't give up. And there's lots of no's in the world, but you don't give up if you believe in yourself and what you're doing. And you just don't give up.
Yeah. And a lot of self-confidence.
One day you just don't know, you know. I mean, it's like my daughter's an artist, and she's like, oh, you know. And I'm like, you don't see what you're doing. I said, but other people are like, oh, my God, you need to sell that. You need to put that out there. I said, take the fear away, you know. Who cares? You only have a market. Some people are going to like it. Other people won't like it. go with the market for life.
Well, you've got a pretty nice philosophy right there, Rose. Very nice.
You're a
gal after my own heart.
And a guy after mine. Damn, you're married for 62 years.
Well,
I missed
nice.
The boat.
I'm enjoying
boat
our conversation very much.
But I'm glad Leona got it.
She's sitting right here, by the way.
Hi, Leona.
She's always been part of my career. I mean, not the pushy type, but the time that we talk things over very much. Every decision that we've ever made, we've done it jointly. And I rely on her for, like, many, many things. And she always comes through for me. And it's usually
yeah, when
the right
it's really
thing.
About, you know, you were talking about marriage earlier and why Hollywood breaks up so much, because they're looking for their dream when they should be looking for a partner who shares the same dream.
There you go.
Dream.
And it's nice having somebody close that you can talk to that you wouldn't be able to talk to anyone else.
Yeah,
right?
And you have to be open to that person even if you disagree with what they think they're going to do.
Oh,
encourage
yeah.
You know? I mean, be positive towards them, you know?
They're human beings. They're entitled to their opinions.
Exactly. And the whole world should operate like that, right, Shelley?
Oh, yeah. Now, if you and I could put our heads together and change the world, Rose,
we'd
go down in the history books. But we do, you know, we can do what we can in our little circle, and that's the important thing. I've got a birthday coming up in November, and we're throwing a small party at our house. And I'm calling it Memories. And at the end of the evening, I have a whole bunch of memories that I'm going to share with these people, about 10 or 12 people. And I specifically on the invitation I'm going to put on, bring some memories that we have all shared, not only for me, not only me, your own. And let's have some fun. And I can hardly wait for them to show up. But it's going to be fun.
From you and
what
you,
by the way, what are you doing? What are you doing on November 10th? We have an extra seat at the table.
I'm going to have to remind you about that.
I'll tell you, life is good if you make it, if you put something into it. It's great.
I get up every day. I say, thank you, God. I mean, just for being able to walk, breathe, look at the flowers, the trees, the sky, and talk to wonderful people and that I've never met, but I feel like they're friends, and we're sharing information to people that hopefully will encourage them and make them know they can be whatever they want to be in life and make it a better world. And, you know, it's the simple things in life that are really, really important.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, though, Rose, I think I have a friend. I made a friend with you.
So much. And on top of that, my dear, dear friend, and we'll make Leona our friend, too, my friend, too.
Oh, Leona, she sends you. Leona says right back to you.
All right. And so, unfortunately, we run out of time. Not enough time. We didn't run out enough time.
We'll let some time go by, and if you want me back, I'll be glad to come back.
It's your time to shine, Shelley. It's your time to shine, and you can tell our audience any message you like. You can tell them any web social media you have, and where to get your book, of course, from Brooklyn to Burbank.
So I can do that. Amazon put the name of the book from Brooklyn to Burbank. Sheldon Cohen, writer, it should come up, and then you can just follow the instructions where to get it. It's easy, and hopefully I'll have a number of people come and check it out. And if you'd like to write to me, I won't give you my address over the phone, but can they write to you, Rose, and forward the letters if they want?
Oh, they can message me, yeah.
Either by PC or whatever, and you have my webpage or my address, so you can send it to me. But folks at home, Enjoy the holiday. As Rose said, please be careful with the fireworks. And I look forward to maybe doing this again with Rose, if that's possible.
Oh, great. That'd be fantastic. Absolutely. And we'll want to hear about your other books as well and see how this book is doing, which I'm sure will be totally successful. God bless you and Leona. We'll talk again. And have a very happy Independence Day.
Thank you, and peace to you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
And bye-bye, sweetie. And that's all we have time for because Shelley Cohen left the building. And yours truly has to leave the building until next Wednesday at noon. Tell a friend, tell a stranger, tell a foreigner in another country who listened to our shows from Sweden to Ireland, I mean, to the Netherlands. It's fantastic. I love it. To be sure to listen every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Check the time in your country and in your state for Rose Colombo, Colombo Chronicles Live.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or, if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.